Well, as I've told you before, when I speak for you all, I'm not a preacher, I'm a teacher. So I hope you forgive me if we start with an object lesson this morning. And my heart's pounding because you would think that it wouldn't bother me to go in front of people, but it does. I have something up front here, a pack of M&Ms. Some of you have been eyeing it already. And how many of you like M&Ms, by the way? I do. So it's not just a little boy thing, it's also a big boy thing, I think, to like M&Ms. Well, this morning I need a volunteer to come up here, and I would like for you to have those M&Ms. The only requirement is you have to be shorter than me. let's start with the really. Braden, would you like those M&Ms? Do you want to come up and get them? You want to come up here and get them? So why don't you come over here? Thank you, by the way, for coming up here. That's very brave of you. I know what that feels like a little bit. But anyway, let's look at those M&Ms. Do you like M&Ms? Does your family like M&Ms? Good. I would like for you to have them. You want to go ahead and take them? All right, go for it. There's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's the problem?
I can't reach them.
Oh, perfect answer. You can't reach them. I think I might be able to help you out if you can trust me. So I have over here... Now, it's not the world's greatest of ladders. It's made to get into a bunk bed. Let's see here, and I will even hold the ladder. I'll help hold you. I think you can go up there and see if you can get it. You might have to go one more step, but I'll hang on to you. Can you reach it? All you need to do is just kind of pull on it. All right, tell you what. You come back down and you hold the ladder for me. You think you can do that? You hold the ladder for me. Just hang on to it so it doesn't slide, and I'll get them for you. How's that? Let's give Braden a hand. So what we demonstrated here this morning was there was something that we wanted, but it was impossible to get it. In the Garden of Eden, and I'm going to start there. I'm a big history person. I like to know why something matters. But in the Garden of Eden, man sinned. As a result of his sin, he lost his holiness. He is denied access to God's presence. And as you think, to me, that's one of the saddest pictures in the Bible. When I think about what they had, and they had to go away. And it wasn't really even the garden itself that was the worst. they probably could create a little bit of a garden by working really, really hard. The worst part was what they lost in God's presence. And I'd like to start this morning by informing each one of you that that's you. That's me. Our sinfulness says you can't be where God is, because God is holy. And he says, no way can sin enter my presence. So it was a sad day. The reason that this happened is because Adam and Eve got this temptation, which is very common, and you and I all struggle with it. Satan came to them and said, you can be like God. Why put your focus on God? You can do your own thing. That is exactly where every one of us are today. We wake up every morning and we have our agenda. We have our dreams. We have our way of trying to be somebody. And many people go through life and work really, really hard. And they actually achieve a lot. They get a lot done. But they come to the end of their life and they realize they didn't get what they thought they were getting. They didn't get what they even wanted. In fact, most people don't even know what it is that they really want. They deceive themselves into thinking what they really want. So I grew up in the era of Michael Jackson, and I use his story a lot. Michael Jackson was an incredibly gifted young man. And he grew up in a family that was singing, and he had so much potential. But it all became about him. And the more famous he got, the more records he released, the more he pursued becoming a somebody, and the unhappier he became. And at the end of his life, living in his own little mansion garden, he needed what he called milk to go to sleep because he was so miserable. And it was drugs. And he overdosed and died. Sad story. And yet many of us do the same thing. We are chasing after things that we think are going to find what we want. We never get it, because we're looking for the wrong thing. There is within each one of us a deep hole. That hole is a God hole, where we want to be with God. We want to know God. We want to be in his presence. And yet we have this problem. So now I'm going to ask you to do a little bit of work again. Who in the Old Testament are your heroes? Let's hear some of them.
Joseph.
David. Daniel. Joshua. Anybody else?
Enoch.
Ruth. Great. These are all great. And it's interesting to me, none of us pick, usually, as one of our heroes, Jacob. Jacob was a little bit of a jerk, wasn't he? He was known as a deceiver. And he got paid back. Did he get deceived in his life by his own children? He did. And yet when we think of the great patriarchs, God often said, I'm the God of Abraham. What's with that? Why does Jacob matter? Why did God care so much about Jacob? Well, I think it was because, not because he did such great things. He actually did some pretty negative things. But I think there was in Jacob's heart a desire to be with God, to know God. In fact, Jacob had a dream. If you read in Genesis 28, that's not our text, so we're not going to read it. He had the deceiver, he had just done an awful deed that kind of is repulsive to many of us at the instigation of his mother. And yet, this is a picture that takes me back to my childhood. You guys remember that picture from Bible school days when you were, I do. And God gave him this dream. And Jacob was left scratching his head about this dream. This is what the dream looked like. It was a ladder from earth to heaven. The angels of God were going up and down. I think that's important. The Lord stood at the top. And he kept saying, despite the fact he just was a big jerk and had to leave home, never did see his mother again because of it. And yet God's standing up there and he says, my promises to you are good. I'm going to fulfill my promises to you. He says, I'm with you. See the presence? I'm with you. I'll keep you. I'm going to bring you back here. That's some pretty amazing stuff. And Jacob woke up the next morning and he's like, God was here. He had experienced the presence of God like he never had in all of his life. And he renamed the place. He called it, what did he call it? Bethel. And it became a very special place. And I think it's still called Bethel today. I could be wrong about that. I don't know. And we're like, why did he get to have a dream like that? But I think what God was telling Jacob, I want that connection with you. And when Jacob thought about that connection, he thought, that is more than anything that I desire, even more than the birthright. He wanted that connection with God. In the New Testament, you see where Jesus basically says, without saying it, I'm fulfilling Jacob's dream. It's pretty cool when you look at it. You find it in John 1. He was being introduced, or a man who later became a disciple was being introduced to Jesus. You have, it's important that you understand this was a fig tree. He was under the fig tree. Notice he's sitting on something. And in those days, people would, it was considered a sacred spot to pray under a fig tree. So he was there praying, may have been praying that all God's prophecies would come to pass and that the Messiah would come. I don't know. And then here comes a disciple and say, hey, you need to come meet this guy. And they had a conversation. Actually, Jesus says, well, I saw you under the fig tree. And he was like, how did you know I was under the fig tree? And they had this little conversation back and forth. At the end of that conversation, Nathanael said, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. Now, you and I, we read that. That's old hat. Yeah, we know that. But for in Jesus' day, that was a big loaded statement to say that you are, if he truly was who Nathanael was saying he was the fulfillment of all prophecies. He was the God with us, the Emmanuel that Isaiah talked about. And Jesus, kind of with a little smile, I think, he said, you think that was something? You're going to see even bigger things. And then he goes on to say what those bigger things are. He says, you're going to see heaven open. You're going to see the angels of God ascending and descending. Do you see the picture? And they're descending on me, on the Son of Man. So I think Philip was also left scratching his head. What does that mean? But I think what in Jesus' mind, he had come to fulfill Jacob's dream, to be that connection for those of us, which is all of us, who have been driven out of the presence of God, to bring us back and reconnect us. And the latter is Jesus Christ, the Son of Man. So what does that look like? How does he reconnect us? I'm a sinful man. God is holy. I can't even begin to go into his presence. So what was he going to be doing? Abraham got a beautiful picture, Abraham and Isaac, the patriarchs, on their way to the sacrifice of Isaac. And I think that's a pretty accurate picture. Isaac was not a little, he wasn't Braden's size. He was a big boy. He was more like Joel here. I think Sam would have a pretty hard time tying up Joel and putting him on top of an altar. This was an incredible event that happened. God was doing an object lesson for you and I to help us to understand. And Isaac just says, hey, Dad, behold, the fire, the wood, where is the lamb for the offering? And as so many people in the Bible do, when they speak, they say more than they realize they're saying. I usually say less than what I realize I'm saying, but some people in the Bible say more than what they realize. And he said, God, I've looked at those words very carefully. God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. That has two fulfillments. The immediate fulfillment was that day, Isaac's life was spared through a lamb that God provided. The ultimate fulfillment of this prophecy was what Jesus did. That's why what he did was so important. When John the Baptist saw him, he made this statement, and John the Baptist also was saying more than he knew because he still had questions in his mind. But the words just came. He saw Jesus after the baptism, and he said, behold, the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world. He didn't really know either, because he came back later with questions. But a very important one for us to know. And so we have Jesus, the writer of Hebrews. I'd like for you to turn to chapter 8. And we're going to read verses 8 to 12. And now picture in your mind for hundreds and hundreds of years, they had been coming after, not during the time of Jacob, but during the time after Moses. They had set up a place where they could bring their offerings, and they had a system where there was a high priest who there were the daily offerings, but the important one was that yearly, once a year, when the high priest went into the Holy of Holies, took the blood of a bull to cover his own sins, and a blood of goat, of a goat, to cover the sins of the people. And he sprinkled that on the mercy seat once a year. No other person ever went in there, because the presence of God was represented there. By the time you get to the New Testament, the presence of God is no longer there. The reason we know that is because several Gentile generals went back in there and they said, there's nothing there. And they came out alive. And that's why what Jesus did, he didn't have to go to the temple because the temple was devastated in many ways. He still recognized the temple, but he realized that something was amiss. Let's read, and you will see here, it was time for something new. I think sometimes we need to be awakened out of our sleep. You know, if we have grown up in Christian tradition, we think, well, if I just keep in the traditions of mom and dad, you know, that I'm good. I'm good to go. If that's our mindset, we're no better than the people in the Old Testament who were just going through their offering rituals and thought, well, we're good to go. But God said something was wrong. Let's read. If you'd like to stand for this reading, that would be great. Verse 8 to 12. For he finds fault with them when he says, speaking of the old covenant, this is Jeremiah speaking, actually. Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will establish a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. That includes you and me, but we don't have time to look at that. Not like the covenant that I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt. For they did not continue in my covenant. And so I showed no concern for them, declares the Lord. That's why the presence of God was no longer in there. For this is a covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. I will put my laws into their minds. I will write them on their hearts. I will be their God. They shall be my people. They shall not teach each one his neighbor and each one his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they shall all know me. From the least of them to the greatest. And here's why it's possible. For I will be merciful toward their iniquities, and I will remember their sins no more. You can be seated. So Jesus, our great high priest, did something to change the way we relate to God. Go back to verse 10. How can God's laws be in our mind? An unregenerate man, can those minds be full of God's law? It's not possible. How can God's law be in our hearts, the seat of our emotions? Only if our hearts are sprinkled with the blood. In the old days, those sins were covered, they were okay, but they were not changed. And he says, I will be their God, they shall be my people. Now we are one with him, we're his people. And even bigger, we're going to know God. When Adam and Eve were driven out of the garden, they lost that connection. They no longer had that regular conversation back and forth. God was only faint, and many times their ideas of who God was wrong for people in the Old Testament. I think Jacob's ideas were wrong. But he said, I'm going to take care of the sin problem. That's the issue. So why does Jesus qualify? What qualifies Jesus to take away our sin and to be our high priest? Well, he had to be a human. That was pretty clear. because it was a sacrifice for humans. He had to identify with us, read the book of Hebrews. He had to understand temptation. He had to know sorrow. He had to be able to identify clearly with us. And then, and this is a loaded statement, you could do a whole sermon on just exactly what this means, but I'm just going to give it. It's, he offered himself. No other high priest ever did that. But he offered himself. Do you see Abraham's comment to Isaac? He offered himself as an eternal, perfect sacrifice. And just like that lamb took Isaac's place, Jesus has taken our place. He made payment for our sin and restored our relationship. That is atonement. That is why the minute Jesus died, what happened? Even though you'll never read it in the history books. Only a few people knew it, but key people knew it that somehow got the word out to the disciples. Because most, the average Jew never went in there. But the veil of the temple was torn. Another object lesson. He wasn't back there anyway. But it was an object lesson that you may now enter the Holy of Holies. You can come back into the presence of God. What Jesus did satisfied justice so that none of God's character is violated. And we can now come back into God's presence. And I know there's many different ways and people argue about just exactly how did this happen. You know what? I don't think we'll ever fully know. Because they all fall apart. We like to think of Jesus as our mediator. But our teacher in Israel kept highlighting, and I've been thinking and thinking about it. He says, you cannot see Jesus as a third party mediator. Jesus was God. He was both man and God. I can't wrap my tentacles around that. I don't think you can either. But he was not doing any third party mediation here. Because Jesus was God. He gave himself for us to open that possibility. So what does this mean for me? With Jesus being my high priest who did two things, and I want you to fully understand, he made atonement. But the book of Hebrews makes it clear he continues to be our high priest. Let's not just stop at the atonement. Let's continue that relationship is my challenge this morning. Turn back to Hebrews 4. I won't make you stand for this one. Verses 14 through 16, last Sunday's lesson. So I'm kind of cheating here. I'm using last Sunday's lesson, and then I'm also stealing from next Sunday's lesson here. But it says here in verse 14, since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens. When he passed through the heavens, where was he going? He was entering the dwelling place of God, the Holy of Holies. Just like the high priest passed through the different stages to get into God's presence. Jesus, the Son of God, then he challenges us. Let us hold fast our confession. Understand what you have. Don't let go of it. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who is, I'm thinking, was it last week where in the ladies' Sunday school class, somebody said, well, did Jesus have to go through labor pains? Truth trust me, guys, Jesus understands everything that we go through. Pain is not the worst of the things that we go through. It really isn't. I wasn't in the ladies' class, by the way. I just heard about that. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Now, here's where I want you to go. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace. We're invited to the Holy of Holies. We're invited to come to the presence of God. Go back to that picture in the garden. That picture is no longer valid for you and I. We are now welcomed back. Why? To receive mercy, take care of our sin problem, that's the atonement, and find grace to help in the time of need. That's going even further than taking care of the sin problem. That is a beautiful invitation. So quickly, and I know this is a huge list, don't try to wrap your tentacles around it. I'm just trying to create a picture here for you. What does that mean? Well, one of the things I think we need to stop and think about, sin is still serious, guys. Sin is still awful. It's just as awful as it ever was. I think one of the things that we tend to do in our day, living under grace, is we forget just how horrible sin is in God's eyes. And we make excuses for it and say, well, God, you know, God understands, his grace will cover. I've heard people say that. Guys, sin is serious. Because it's still, I know when I do something wrong, I immediately feel it in my relationship with God. You know what we're talking about? And we have to go back and find our high priest and we have to have a chat. Forgiveness is costly. Jesus paid the ultimate price. Shed blood is necessary. But forgiveness is mine. This is the really, really cool part. All I have to do is confess that I need it. Just have to say, I need it. And it's mine. Because I can't pay that price. There's no way I can pay that price. The gulf is too vast. But somebody paid it. Who was able to pay it. Who was qualified to pay it. And I just need to say, I need it. And it's mine. That's what happens at the throne of grace. It's a beautiful invitation. We have assurance of faith. Many people doubt their salvation. Guys, that's not from God. That is Satan trying to undermine that. Don't ever forget that. If we doubt our salvation, and I have come to God and said, I confess I need you. If we're doubting that, then we're doubting that that ladder actually works. He doesn't want us to doubt. He wants to come with full assurance and say, thank you for letting me in. One of the things that Jesus' sacrifice does is he makes us new creatures. He clears our conscience. In the Old Testament, if I did something wrong, I could go with the lamb and I could sacrifice and I could probably feel a little better about it. But guys, when God has forgiven you, don't let your conscience continue to trouble you about that. Because once again, we're doubting that God's blood can actually cover that sin. Just relish in God's forgiveness. and what he has provided for you. But take ownership of it. And realize that it is not anything you can fix. It is only what God can fix. And we're going to fall. But even when we fall, the Bible says we have an advocate. We're going to mess up. If you want to know how Jesus feels as high priest, read John chapter 17. It's a high priestly prayer. And you may not know this, but Jesus prayed for you in that prayer. Look at verse 20 of John 17. I do not ask for these only. The first part of that prayer was for the disciples, but also for those who will believe in me through their word. That's you and me. He's praying for you. He prayed for me. The night before he was going through the toughest thing that he was going to have to ever go through, he cared enough about me that he prayed for me. He included me in that prayer. And then he continues to say his dream for me in this renewed, restored relationship. He wants us to be with him. Back to the presence. I want them that they may be with me. They can actually see my glory. In that picture in the Garden of Eden, I like that picture of the angel with the glory that they had to leave. And he's saying, I want them to see it. I want them to experience that. That's in verse 24. And then there's other nuggets that you can pull out. He says he wants us to know him. I really like this one because this one's hard for me. I want them to love like I love. I don't love that way at all. I have a long ways to go, but that's his dream for me, to love like that. To be sanctified by truth. That's cleansed. My bad habits, my mind just transformed. And then the book of Hebrews has to say this. It talks about how Jesus was perfected through suffering. And I have a funny feeling that that's true for us too. And the last one, through the power of his spirit, we too can overcome. Just like Jesus was tempted to sin, and you and I are regularly tempted to sin, I make my little excuses as to why, yeah, it's just kind of who I am. It's a kind of a family habit, and it's just, I've made some progress, and we don't claim the power of the Spirit, which is available to truly be overcomers. That's Jesus' dream for us. Now, this list could go on and on and on. This is just a sample. But I like to sum it up with Romans 12, 1. You can offer sacrifices too because of what Jesus said. He says, I beseech you that you offer your life, your body, a living sacrifice. That's worship. That's giving your time. That's allowing him to change you, to transform you. What a privilege. Don't stop with atonement. Atonement is important, but let the Holy Spirit radically change you and put you to work to bring great glory to him as he spent his life bringing glory to his Father. So that's the ladder. Jesus is the ladder. Use the ladder. Make use of it. And remember that your dreams are often not the ultimate dreams. Exchange your dreams for God's. Enjoy the ladder. It's a great way to live. And my last challenge is be forever changed by your encounter with the ladder. Let's have a song.